Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday, on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to Tampering.
For this beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
With Sam Panic.
To be able to bring people together.
What do you do, baby?
Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to executives in the league is
stop talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
The charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
Was it right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Kind of awkward to even talk about it. I can't even mention teams anymore.
That's what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
You try all you want with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not rocket science.
Everybody, we don't have tamper with the guys.
I didn't tamper. I'm just telling you what happened. I'm just telling you what happened.
Hello and welcome to the Tampering Podcast, part of the Athletic NBA Show Network. I am Sam Amick, national NBA writer at The Athletic, here as always with the one and only Anthony Slater on the West Coast. Slater, we thought we were going to have the usual suspect, Fred Katz, out east as our Eastern Conference East Coast representative. Fred, get well, buddy. Not feeling the best today. So, of course, before we bring our guy on, here's the behind the curtain part of the pod programming lifestyle, We put out like this 4 or 5 pronged attack. Let's get a third voice. It's very short notice. You know, we got to find somebody who knows the game inside and out, somebody who can be an expert on one team, but then talk about the whole league, you know, like Fred does a very good job of doing. Jay King wins the day, coming up big in like, I think like 7 minutes notice from Boston, Massachusetts. Kid, Jay, what's up, brother?
It was more like an hour or 7 minutes notice, but I was just asleep for the first hour and 7 minutes. I slept in a little bit. You said I was not your like seventh or eighth choice, but I'm pretty sure you went through the list.
Sam, we landed on somebody who was at Kevin Garnett Day in Boston. This should have been
First choice. It should have been the first pick. We hit the lottery in terms of, no offense to our other colleagues, like getting the right guy for this week, for sure. And I don't feel too bad, Jay, because it really was like a simultaneous let's hit up these 6-7 folks. But it was very entertaining to get a quick glimpse into everybody's lifestyles when it comes to a Monday morning, right? So Andrew Schlecht and I, our super producer, off air, we're kind of joking about how among this group, we're the only ones with kids. And so we hit up a bunch of folks like yourself who don't have children and got reminded from a few of them, I'm not going to put their business in the streets, but that they get to sleep in a little bit like some of us don't, you know, so I got a little jealous for a minute, you know, so I'm going to get over that because you are saving the day for sure.
I feel like Robin Williams in Good Will Hunting, that scene when he's like, who'd you talk to before me? And the Professor Lambeau starts listing all the other therapists they tried to bring Will Hunting to before him.
I like him coming in with the Boston perspective, and he's absolutely already dropped a Good Will Hunting reference.
Absolutely.
That's my favorite movie ever, man.
Shocking.
It isn't like The Town or something.
No. I'll drop a Town reference later.
How about them apples, Jay King says.
All right, man. Good stuff.
How was can we ask him how? Tell us about Kevin Garnett Day.
Yeah, that's where we hit the lottery, man. You got plenty to talk about. KG Day. What was that like?
It was fun. I mean, you guys know, like, some days you just show up to the arena and you know it's going to be a really memorable day. And that was one of them. He's just a very unique guy. And so we put together an oral history of, like, his just the impact that he had on the Celtics and just calling people, talking to former teammates, former coaches. It was funny because they would just rip him. They would recall stories about him just ripping them apart when they failed to do what they were supposed to do. And then they'd be like, oh, yeah, and he's my favorite teammate ever, or he's my favorite player ever.
Right.
So there's this dichotomy between him being like this maniac who held guys to the highest standard ever and also those same guys just loving him unconditionally. And he kind of had that same intensity even at the jersey retirement ceremony. Like, he said the way he thanked the Boston crowd was, I knew you – y'all fucked with me, but I didn't know y'all fuck with me like this.
He said that like on the PA system. Like,
yeah, he was sitting at half court, like the whole crowd is listening, and that's what he said. Like, there are little kids in the crowd. I'm pretty sure his kids were there. And
I think his kids may have heard that anyway. That word a few times.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure they've heard it once or twice. But and nobody else could get away with that. Like,
right.
It didn't matter to anyone. Everyone just kind of figured he would do something like that.
My favorite.
I was gonna say, as a quick aside, I was flipping through the old social medias this morning, and this is kind of on the same vibe. Saw this old video, and this is not a Boston dude. This is a Detroit dude. But Eminem was at a concert one time and looked out in the stands and saw a really young child. And like brought the whole thing to a halt and pointed at the dad. It was just like, yo, you brought your kid to a fucking Eminem concert. It's midnight. Like, what are you doing? Like, that's KG vibe right there. But it's real.
My favorite part of the day was when Jaylen Brown had that dunk in mid-game. And instead of getting back on defense, he sees KG, he goes over to give him a high five. I mean, it was a really good dunk, but like, how many other humans on earth could, you know, coax Jaylen Brown into a mid-game, like Dallas is pushing it up the court, and he's like, gotta go give this dude a high five real quick.
And I bet Jaylen's hand is still stinging a little bit today. Like, that was a hard high five. KG was not messing around. And then, like, a minute after that, I don't even know if they showed it on TV, but Jason Tatum had a finish in the lane, and I think Dallas called a timeout, and Tatum went over and flexed over in the crowd right near Garnett, and Garnett was like doing the same thing, like you could see, like he was hopping up and down, like he was ready to get back in the game. There's just a different level of intensity from that guy than just about anyone else on the planet.
Oh, 100%. I was gonna say, I don't have any, you know, I'm no John Krasinski or Jay King when it comes to KG stories. But I was in the room. I'm dating myself, but I was in the room when he had his legendary press conference with Minnesota when they were in the playoffs and he was dropping AK-47 references and rocket launchers. And, you know, that was for me the first time you saw. And he was, of course, talking about, I think it was the King series, when, you know, how they were going to come at them. And, you know, I remember just looking at this guy going, holy smokes, no filter. No, nothing. Take us through a little bit, you know, that piece that you guys did was fantastic. And then I even caught, it was funny to see on Twitter yesterday, I think it was, that Ryan McDonough, you know, formerly of the Celtics, of course, a lot of Celtics history there, former Suns GM, had shared, you know, another anecdote on social.
Yeah, we should have called him too.
Right. You know, where he, you know, I won't take it through the whole thing, but he had a funny story about KG. So, I mean, there's so many of them. Just what was that whole project like for you?
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Just because I feel like a lot of the time when I'm working on a story, guys are reluctant to talk. Guys don't really want to talk about a certain subject. You're always running into issues like that as an NBA reporter. But because it's Kevin Garnett, guys, like, the stories are just as interesting to those guys. They want to relive it just as much as I want to tell those stories. And so I feel like everyone I talked to was just as into it as I was.
Right.
And so that part of it is fun when the people you reach out to are like, they just want to, yeah, they want to talk about Kevin Garnett. They want to relive the time that they were talking with 45 minutes left before a game and he lit them up, or how they were petrified to go in the steam shower because Kevin Garnett, that was part of his routine. And if you're in the steam shower when Kevin Garnett comes in the locker room, he's going to let you have it.
Right.
So that part of it was very, very fun. And there were some stories that we weren't allowed to tell that were even better than the ones we put in.
So, don't tease us with that. Here they are. Here they're coming at you on the Tampering Pod. All of them.
It's really cool. And like, he was clearly just kind of a competitive maniac, but also the other side of him was just being so generous. This part didn't go in the story, but because I got it like the night after our story had already been filed, it was already ready for publish. The video coordinator during the 08-09 season, he was technically an intern at the time, so he didn't get per diem. And Kevin Garnett, they landed wherever they were, Chicago, wherever it was. And KG said to him, did they give you per diem? And he said no. And I think that was probably part of the rule book, like only full-time employees get per diem or whatever. KG said, come with me to my room. Brought him to his room, took out $1,000, slammed it on the bed, said, there you go, there's your per diem. And so stuff like that is like just kind of eye-opening.
That's cool.
And so that's part of the reason everyone wanted to talk about him. He was super generous on top of the crazy stuff.
Jay, of the ones that did get published, just real quick, did you have a favorite?
I love the steam shower part, that Brandon Bass was petrified to go in the steam shower. That just cracked me up. Just because Brandon Bass is like this huge, strong dude.
He was,
And he didn't want to go in the steam shower. Yeah, honestly, all of it. I also love him yelling at Jamie Young's baby. That part was funny. And Jamie being like, yeah, I need my kid back, Kevin. all that stuff. It was really fun to work on, just because everyone has different stories about the guy that stand out. I think Avery Bradley said this to me one time, not when I was talking to him this week or last week, but he said this to me once. He said, when you're with Kevin, it's almost like he wants to give you a moment that you'll remember. I was with Kevin Garnett that moment.
Right.
And so you kind of feel that when you're talking to guys about him.
Did you, the Ray Allen thing, you know, was front and center yesterday. And
yeah.
Ray decides to be there. This is, you know, by the way, coming on the heels of All-Star Weekend in Cleveland. And we talked about it on the pod a little bit. You know, there was that awkwardness between KG and Paul and Ray. And there was a lot of edginess, not even, you know, beyond that storyline. There was Michael looking at people sideways and you know, things of that nature. But for them to kind of, you know, I think tie a bow, maybe, I don't know if they did tie a bow on it, but like to have that be seemingly a positive part of the experience. What was your read there?
Yeah, that was obviously a long time coming. And it's not often that a guy leaving in free agency leads to almost 10 years of coldness between him and guys he was brothers with beforehand. But I think part of that was Kevin Garnett loves harder than everyone else, and Kevin Garnett probably grudges harder than everyone else. And so, you know, someone in his inner circle leaving, that hurt him to the core, because he never would have done that. And so, yeah, it was good to see those guys reunited. I think it means, as they are getting a little older and a little more removed from it, I think it means more to them to kind of cherish what they had and not necessarily, you know, dwell on how it went wrong and how Ray left for Miami and all that. But, you know, it was cool to see that, like, they had a group hug and, you know, it wasn't like there was awkwardness between them. It was like there was a real embrace at All-Star Weekend. And then Ray showing up to the jersey retirement ceremony kind of shows, like, first of all, that Kevin's over it, because he would have been petrified to go if Kevin was still grudging like he was.
Right.
And also that, you know, they're ready to finally move on. And I don't know if they'll be tight from now on. Like, I don't know if they'll be calling each other and reminiscing and stuff like that. But at least they can, you know, cherish the few moments when they do see each other and when they can get the group back together. Because that was another part of yesterday, is like 10 of the 15 guys from that 08 title team were there. Doc Rivers couldn't go because he's coaching, and Rajon Rondo couldn't go because he's still playing, but he left a video message. But there was a lot of support for Kevin, and those guys kind of used it as an opportunity to just celebrate the title one more time.
Let's go present day, Jay. We, you know, even before we were scrambling to fill the old Fred Katz void, we planned on talking about the East quite a bit. And so no better place to start than the 2021-22 Celtics. You talk about a surprise team if you put that label on this group. You know, if you're talking entire season, you're going to look at the Memphis Grizzlies, the Cleveland Cavaliers, teams like that. But the Celtics have had a one-of-a-kind arc here and a narrative where it was a very mediocre beginning. Natural questions right out the gate of, oh, okay, you know, first-year coach Ime Udoka, has he got a grip on it? You know, you got young guys but veterans and Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown where the expectations are high. So you just kind of wondered, you know, how it was going. And then, damn, I mean, you're talking basically, you know, I'm looking at it here, January 8th, they just kind of flip a switch. And, you know, since then, essentially the best team in the NBA. They got a net rating of 12.3 at that since that time. That is not only tops in the league, but tops by more than 4 points. 23-7 record, best defense by far. Obviously active at the trade deadline, adding Derek White. Unpack this for us, you know, in terms of just, you know, factors in your mind that have led to this, you know, level of legitimacy now as we look ahead to the postseason and try to make sense of the East. You know, what have you made of their whole story?
Yeah, it was funny because at first, like, they were just kicking the crap out of very bad teams. And so at the beginning of this streak, it was kind of like, should we trust what the Celtics are doing? How should we evaluate what they're doing? And, you know, it was like they beat the Kings by 40 or whatever it was. They beat everyone else. Like, they had 4 30-point blowouts in the span of a couple weeks. And I think that stretch sort of got them going. And when you talk about, you know, they were 500, like, this wasn't just the switch flipping from this season. It was, they were 500 last season too, right, with a number of the same guys, or at least the same core pieces with Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Marcus Smart. So I think there was a lot of pressure on Tatum and Brown. And I think the way that they handled it earlier this season, the criticism, the people trying to break them up, everything like that, they met together after they blew a 25-point lead against the Knicks. And Jaylen said that they kind of asked each other or talked to each other about, you know, we want to be here together. The grass isn't always greener.
This is that January 6th game?
Yeah. Okay. And they had lost to the Spurs by 2.
Yep.
In just a bad game. And then they blew a 25-point lead against the Knicks. And those guys had a chat. And then from that point on, they got healthy, which was a huge factor in this. They've had most of their guys available the whole time. They've gone to an 8-man rotation with all guys that can defend. And their defense is just awesome. Like, I was a little skeptical at first when they were beating teams by 30, 40, but it's held up against some of the top teams lately. And they've got Robert Williams and Al Horford, who are both just really, really versatile bigs. And they've got size everywhere on the perimeter. When you have Marcus Smart as your smallest guy on the court, and Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are your other two perimeter guys, like, you're just huge. And I think that's a factor that kind of gets overlooked sometimes, is that they are a very physically imposing team, and their defense just really, really, really gets teams out of what they want to do. They switch all the time. And so I don't know whether they'll have enough shooting when it matters. I think we saw that issue pop up against Dallas when they played on Sunday. But like the defense is real, and they'll be very difficult to score on for just about anyone.
What do you think of Brad Stevens' first season as a GM? I mean, he leaned into kind of who they were, right? Trading for Horford, extending Marcus Smart, even extending Josh Richardson, eventually flips Josh Richardson, gets Derek White. But what do you think about just kind of the imprint he's put on the team from a very different position?
I think it's funny because as a coach, he always stressed, like, let's just hit singles, right? Like, let's not go for the home run play. Let's just hit singles, keep it simple. And I feel like he's kind of done that. You know, he took the job and right away flipped Kemba Walker and a first round pick for Al Horford. And that cleared some salary space.
By the way, did that tell the world that Brad Stevens never wanted Al Horford to leave, and that was like a Danny Ainge decision? I just read it that way. Like,
well, then they brought back Daniel Tice too.
Yep.
who was shed the luxury tax. They brought back Enes Kanter and Enes Freedom very briefly, who I didn't think was a Brad favorite at all when he was a player. So I was surprised that Brad brought him back, but I guess he was the last big on the roster for the minimum. But yeah, he's gone out and gotten some guys that he's very familiar with. I think the more important thing to me is that he set out to find guys who could complement Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. And they kind of like backed into Dennis Schroeder, who was just kind of available. I don't think anyone thought he would be available for the price that they got him. I don't think they thought they had a chance at him. And when they did, they were kind of like, all right, Dennis Schroeder, like, let's do this. And he didn't really fit. But the other moves that Brad has made, whether it's for Derek White, for Horford, extending Robert Williams, extending Marcus Smart, they're all guys that fit into the defense first and surround Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown with a lot of size and a lot of versatility ethos. And so I think that's the vision he had when he built the roster, is let's use Marcus Smart at point guard. He won't be the best creator at that position, but he might be the best defender at that position in the entire league. And they think if they have all guys at least Marcus Smart size, then Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, because they're so big and because they're athletic and because they're smart, like, those guys will allow you to have a super, super defense. And not a lot of teams can do that, because you look around the league at a lot of the stars, the big scoring stars, they don't defend at the level that those guys do. So I think the Celtics see that as a way that they can differentiate their roster from just about anyone else. And they've leaned into that, and I think Brad's done a good job hitting singles. He still has, you know, they traded away this year's first round pick, but he has all his first round picks in the future, and to go after whatever next piece, and maybe they do need more scoring, more shooting, but for now, like, the defense is great, and Ime Udoka maybe. Brad's most important move so far. You know, he looked like he was maybe in over his head for a little while, but kept stressing the same things, and you know, it's obvious the players have bought into what he's selling, and that, you know, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, two guys who haven't always been the most willing to pass, are more willing right now to do that than they've been in their entire career. So I think Udoka deserves a lot of credit for that.
Jay, to that point, and before we kind of cast a wider net and get into some of the other squads in the East, does this, you know, stretch put to bed the years-long dialogue about Tatum and Brown, or is it still a referendum in this postseason on kind of where that's headed? Because it feels like it was 5 minutes ago that we were legitimately talking about Jaylen being available.
It is funny because, you know, there was all this talk earlier in the season about, can those guys play with each other? Should they break those guys up? Now you look at the stats, the Celtics are outscoring teams by 12 points per 100 possessions when both those guys are on the court. And I think sometimes when those discussions popped up, it was wiser to kind of zoom out and remember, like, they've been to the conference finals together a couple of times. They've had a lot of success together. They're two guys who really work at it and really care about it. Like, they're not knuckleheads or anything like that, where they're coming in and they're not coachable. It's like they were two guys just trying to figure it out. And I think because of the way they've always played and always being score first guys, it was an adjustment to becoming the number one and the number two for the Celtics. And it was an adjustment to do it without an all-star point guard next to them. It was always Isaiah Thomas, Kyrie Irving, Kemba Walker. There was always somebody to make the game a lot easier for those guys. And Marcus Smart, you know, he's a very good passer. He's a good decision maker. Like, he can also set the table for guys, but it's not the same as that all-star type point guard just breaking down the defense and giving you much easier opportunities. So there was just a learning curve there. And I do think, like, especially early this season, the lack of passing sometimes from those guys was very frustrating for the guys around them. And when Marcus Smart came out and said, you know, teams are loading up on those guys and they don't want to pass the ball, that was not something that he just said because of that one game. That was something that he said because that had been building up for a while.
Right.
And so I think some of the reasons why people were saying to break them up were legitimate. And it was fair to wonder, can those guys change enough to help the guys around them? But I think we've seen since that they are open to the changes that they needed to make, and they've started to make those. And I think Tatum especially, the way he's seeing the floor, the way he's handling double teams, he's just getting off it right. Like, there's not even a thought anymore. It's double team comes, he finds somebody else, he lets that guy make the next play. And it wasn't always like that for him, where he made that pass every time. And he's just trusting the guys around him. And I think that's been the biggest difference for the offense. The defense has reached another level too since they got healthy. But I think Tatum and Brown, but especially Tatum, because he's a better passer than Brown, and he deals with more double teams and all that. Like, the way he's handled all that has really changed things for the Celtics. And you guys know, if you just hold it for a second too long, that changes what the next guy is going to be able to do.
0.5 basketball.
Yeah, and so he's not doing that anymore, and it's allowed Marcus Smart to play better basketball. It's allowed Al Horford to play better basketball. It's promoted more ball movement. And so it's funny that, like, in a way, the way that Tatum and Brown have played over the last 2 months in proving that they could play together also kind of validates all the criticisms about them in the first place. It's like,
sure,
they weren't doing enough to help their other teammates.
Change had to happen.
And now they are, and you can see the difference there.
Well, so, now you go back to Udoka. I think, you know, he's not going to win Coach of the Year, but we talked on the pod last week about how, to me, I mean, if somebody's given Ime some votes, I'm not mad at it. I think he's been extremely impactful there.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Let's turn a page and get into some of the squads that they're going to be up against in these playoffs, because the East are, you know, it's extremely interesting right now. I'm going to give a quick breakdown. You got Miami at the top. Obviously, we're recording this on Monday, 45-24, leading the East, 2.5 up on Philly, tied with Milwaukee, Then you go Chicago, your Celtics, the Cavs. And in terms of teams that I'm going to cut it off there, the Raptors are just one game behind. But teams with great expectations going into the playoffs. We kind of talked off air before jumping on here about how it's, you know, in our minds, I think Heat, Philly, Bucks, Bulls, Celtics, and then, you know, the Cavs have fallen off. They're not only a surprise story, they've lost 7 out of the last 10, you know, but they've got some talent, and who knows what they can do. Break that whole group down, guys. And Slater, let me throw it to you. We continue to overlook Miami. I mean, listen, we probably in the same sense that we're having Jay on this week to break down the Celtics, which is, you know, fantastic. We should probably be doing the same thing next week on Miami. Like, we just don't slow down to appreciate what they're doing. But, you know, Andrew, our producer, had made the point that, you know, in terms of somebody getting bounced in the first round, someone's going to be disappointed here, because if you are the Heat, the Sixers, the Bucks, the Bulls, or the Celtics in that group, oh, by the way, the Nets, who just, I think, put the fear of God into the whole league in their last two games with what they did in Philly, and then the way they beat the Knicks with KD going for 50, you know, I think you got to bring them up into that group. Somebody's going home unhappy. How do you see that landscape?
I'll be in Miami next week, so if you want to do a Miami pod, I can do it from South Beach. If
you can handle the club life in addition to the
You
pod,
don't want
to
be podcasting from Miami, man.
That's got to be like a late afternoon wake up call.
is the better half coming with you on that trip? Personal.
That is a 5 games and 7 nights trip. It's
okay.
It's rough. So,
all right,
is that a back to back in Miami?
Orlando, it's Miami.
It's always tough when you get.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah.
That's brutal.
You should skip Orlando and just zoom in.
Not to be discussed on the pod. no, I mean, how do I look at it? So I was actually at Bucks Warriors Saturday night, and the Bucks defense is like not playing well at all. They gave up 38 to Clay, and just there was just holes everywhere. Now Brooke Lopez is returning tonight, actually. And there's obviously hope from them that can solve some of those issues. But even talking to some Milwaukee people post game, they want to be playing better, but there is like the Nets are this like, you know, time bombs, and you don't, with the play in particularly, you don't know where that seeding's going to be. Right. I mean, even if you finish the season at 8, you win that 7-8 game, you're the 7th seed. So I think there is, you know, if you are sitting at 2 or 3, you might prefer 3 if you know Brooklyn's going to be in the play-in. Because right now, you know, Milwaukee was 2, and that could line up with Brooklyn. They're sitting now, you know, 3 technically, although tied with Philadelphia. That could be the Cavaliers, who you mentioned. Like, there's not a ton of fear about what Cleveland's going to be as a playoff team. So the maneuvering down the stretch for teams to manipulate the matchups that they want. And to me, that goes beyond, you know, trying to avoid potentially playing Brooklyn, but just, you know, who do you want in the 4-5? Where's Cleveland going to be? How do you want to match up? Like, that will be kind of fascinating in the final days of the season, because I do think Cleveland's the soft spot and Brooklyn is who you fear.
I agree. I mean, let's go there for a quick minute, because I mentioned that whole group that's like 1 through 6, basically, and then it's the Nets are bringing up the back end, and I'm starting, again, I don't want to overreact to 2 games, but I'm starting to feel like it doesn't even matter anymore. Those 2 games felt like...
It matters.
Kevin...
You're going to crown them?
I'm not crowning them. I'm just saying, like wild card...
Was that Dennis, know, was that Dennis Green right there? You gonna crown them? Yeah,
that was. They are who we thought.
It's
they
just
were.
They have not shown an ability to stay healthy and together.
All right, then you know what? I mean, I told you, I'm reacting to 2 things. The Philly game, man. Like, I love regular season games when it takes so much to get these stars to act like a regular season game truly matters, and to watch Kevin and Kyrie go into Philly. And clearly it had been behind the scenes being like, yo, we are going to embarrass James Harden. That's what we're doing today. That's how it felt. I'm not saying I was told that. This is just me talking, you know, it's not intel, but like, man, it felt like that. And you got the Embiid factor, where Kevin and Joel have gone at each other in the past in terms of jawing a little bit. You got the Ben Simmons weirdness of him, you know, hanging out and getting booed by the fans, and those guys who essentially just became his teammates deciding to play the big brother role and to defend him in that hostile environment. And so if you're Philly, it's like you've got this entire regular season that you should be proud of. You have thrived without Ben Simmons. Joel has been at the top of the MVP conversation. And Brooklyn, it felt like, just came in and just ripped a lot of that, you know, kind of out of their soul. And that was an impressive game. And then the Knicks thing, you know, just Kevin on his own showing that coming off that injury and being back now, that he's just coming for your neck from here until wherever they take it.
There's going to be so much on Kevin Durant, especially if Kyrie is still a half game player.
Spectator. Sitting in the Kevin Garnett seats during the home games.
And it's not just offensively either. Like, they are going to be playing a number of small guards who are going to be targets in the playoffs. It's going to be Kyrie. It's going to be Seth Curry. It's going to be Patty Mills, Goran Dragic. Like, four of their, eight best players are point guard size who are just going to get attacked by whoever it is, whether it's Harden or Tatum or Giannis. Like guys are just going to be hunting out switches and going right at those guys. And Durant is just going to have so much on his plate. So that's where I question whether the Nets will have enough. And also, like, what are they going to get from Simmons? We haven't seen him play basketball since he was bad enough in a playoff series that his coach and his co-star both kind of verbally went at him after the game in their press conferences. And what's the back going to be like when he comes back? What's his headspace going to be like when he gets back? And on the nights when Kyrie isn't there, is Ben Simmons as your two good enough? And I don't know if that is, and if it is, it's probably because Kevin Durant is just next level. But it's funny because the East is like, there's a bunch of teams that are still just kind of in the experimental stage. Like Philly, I don't really know what they're going to be, even though Harden and Embiid are monsters. Brooklyn, like, we still haven't seen them with Ben Simmons. Even Milwaukee, like, what's Brook Lopez going to be like if he's not in there in the playoffs? How does that change how they handle it, all those matchups? So I just think there are a lot of teams with questions to answer right now throughout the Eastern Conference. And that's part of what makes it fun this year, is that there's no team that has it all figured out.
I don't want to overreact to the Brooklyn-Philadelphia game, because I do think a lot of people just saw that and were like, cross the Sixers off. But, like, blowouts happen in the league. I mean, blowouts happen in the playoffs.
They sure started the James Harden conversation again, though, didn't it?
It did, and I'll flip it to you, and you can get right into it, because I know you got some steamers coming on James Harden.
Yes, let's get some steamers.
But blowouts happen in the playoffs.
I have a different definition of steamers than y'all. That did not land well.
I wasn't prepared for that steamer.
You know what was a bigger blowout? The Nets blowing the Bucks out. What was it, game two of that playoff series last year? So it happens. I mean, like, yes, like, you can go ahead and detail James Harden's history and the fact that he did seem to kind of shrink in that game. And how about Kyrie Irving being like the defensive, you know, ace in that game on James Harden? Not a good look.
Well,
for James.
It's funny because I'm not going to have the steamers you were waiting on, I don't think, because honestly, Jay's face was great there. James, you know, far be it from me to be the James Harden apologist, but it does sometimes bother me that if we're, and this is like really high profile former players on television who will just have no qualms about the second he struggles in a game like this, just saying, well, he doesn't play well in big games. And it's like, no, if you want to go through and look at all of his big games, there have been plenty of big games where he produced and he put up big numbers. And the narrative is not as cut and dried, I don't think, as a lot of people make it out to be. And Slater, you know this as well as anybody, because, you know, first of all, you're up against this, you know, dynasty Warriors team year in and year out, where because the Rockets had built their whole entire operation the way they had, that it was, you know, just an absolutely massive load on Harden's plate. And then he's trying to take down the Giant and wasn't able to do it and had a lot of bad games in big games. So I get it. But I did for a day in Philly when they lose to Brooklyn, yes, it left me looking at James and going, oh boy, like what if, you know, what if some of those old, you know, haunts are still kind of rattling around in his head? And what if he's not the guy who can get this thing done in Philly? Because if they shoot an air ball, so to speak, in the playoffs, you know, then of course the ripple effect from there is this was Daryl Morey's big move. If on year one, and there was some discussion on ESPN postgame about this, it, you know, if they can't get the championship this year, if they can't get it next year, you know, if Kyrie and Kevin then figure their stuff out and stick around for a long time and Ben Simmons is a major net positive in that Nets environment, you know, you wonder where's the window for Philly. They're really, really good, but they want to win the entire thing. This is not about getting to the finals or to the conference finals. They want to win the entire thing. So having that much relying on James Harden that much at this stage of his career too, where there have been times where he just didn't look like the old guy that we came to know, the former MVP, and you didn't know if it was because of age or conditioning or lack of, you know, of F's given because he was trying to get out of Brooklyn. But I think there were some red flags there that he showed the other night.
Did you hear KD postgame, like talking about, you know, Embiid going to the line so much took the rhythm out of their offense. We knew they're slow, so we were just going to speed them up.
Did you hear what he said about their defense?
No, what?
Somebody made this point. I'm forgetting who, but he talked about you don't ever see players really break it down from an X's and O's standpoint in the type of candid way that kind of shows their hand.
Yeah.
And I'm paraphrasing, but he said in his postgame interview, well, you know, we had looked at tape of Philly and they don't make second and third efforts. So we knew, you know, that we just keep that ball moving, that we are going to be fine. And it was like some pretty subtle shade at their entire defensive effort that like,
I think that was more a shot at Harden.
Sure.
Right. Like that was, I thought it was a not so subtle shot at
That's
Harden
a good point.
Because he's always been the guy who doesn't make the second effort or the third effort.
Right.
That felt to me like KD just kind of needling Harden. He's ruthless, Kevin Durant, by the way.
I was going to say, I'm sensitive to speaking for guys, so I'm not doing that. But do we feel pretty confident here saying that Kevin's got a little, he's in his feelings a bit about what James chose to do? I feel pretty confident saying that.
Yeah. Sure. And you know what? Like, Harden joined a superstar that KD seems to be slightly annoyed with as well, like Embiid, right? He's getting in Embiid's face the last two games. And some of the shade he was throwing in that post game was directed towards Embiid. And, like, you know, I think it's bold of him to kind of, I guess, put it out there, like you said, not even just like that's the game plan, but, you know, to me, that's a way to potentially motivate the Sixers. But it seems to be he's saying, like, I don't believe, come a playoff series, they can be motivated like this.
Right.
I'm
here for it. Yeah. And that was the thing, is it's just so rare to see, especially in this generation, these guys, like to see them go at each other. I mean, everything is so friendly. I mean, we talked at the top of the pod, Jay, about KG and what he represented. You know, that is an outlier for sure at this point. So in that regard, that game was fun to watch.
That was a lot of fun. And I do think the Harden discussion has veered too far toward what he can't do. Like you brought up, Sam, during those Rockets series, like they were designed to grind it to a halt and play one-on-one and have him do everything. And that puts so much pressure on him because not only is he making the play every time, but the defense knows it, and they're loaded up to stop him. And so I think, obviously, they're trying to run things a little differently in Philly, where he's going to be catching the ball on the move, not doing as much ISO, trying to use Embiid's gravity to free him up. And I wonder if that'll make things easier for him and set him up to have a more efficient postseason run. But they're fascinating because Embiid, like, nobody talks about him. He doesn't have the best playoff record either, and I know he's had some great series. But if some of the same issues with Harden that have popped up with like the fourth quarter stuff, he can get tired late in games or late in series. Embiid has some of that stuff too. And maybe together, you know, some of that stuff will go away and they'll help alleviate the pressure on both of them.
Victorinox, the makers of the original Swiss Army knife, have been a reliable companion for life's everyday challenges, mastering functionality, innovation, iconic design, and uncompromising quality with its products. The Victorinox Swiss Army knife provides you with all the things you don't think about until you need it. Tweezers, a screwdriver, and even a corkscrew. With the Victorinox Swiss Army Knife, you can be prepared to master everyday life. You can find Victorinox Swiss Army Knives at Dick's Sporting Goods.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Guys, we're not going to break down the entire East, and I'm going to make an executive decision here since Jay was nice enough to jump on with no notice. Don't want to keep him all day long. Let's end on a Western Conference note. And LeBron James does not, I don't think, enjoy the idea that here in mid-March, you know, podcasts like this one are resorting to giving him flowers for individual accomplishments. That's not what he was trying to do this year. He's trying to win a championship and those prospects.
I think it is what he's trying to do now.
Oh, here comes Jay. I like it. All right. We'll hold that for a second. The championship prospects looking incredibly dim at the moment. The Lakers are a disaster. But I got to admit that, I feel like we got to take a minute to marvel at what the dude is doing individually. So he's right there in the thick of the scoring title race. He's only got one in his entire historic career. And so got a chance to get a second. And we are kind of lined up here for a fun finish when it comes to the scoring title. So Joel Embiid coming in at 29.8 points at the moment. LeBron 29.7. Giannis Antetokounmpo 29.7. And I should know the answer to this, guys. I mean, what do we know? What's the threshold for minimum games played to qualify? Because, you know, KD is right there. I think he's missed too much, but he's also at 29.7.
I think it's higher than he's going to get.
Right, right. All right, take Kevin out the discussion then. But LeBron doing this, just a little bit of historical context, and I'm stealing this from Micah Adams on Twitter the other day. Give Micah a follow. From Basketball Reference, it's got 23 players in NBA history have played a 19th season. Only six have averaged double figures. And here LeBron is, again, at 29.7. The other wild part about this breakdown that I'm looking at is LeBron, you know, at 29.7, far and away the most of that entire group of 23 players in their 19th season. Kobe all the way down at 22.3. So you got two guys out of 23 in the 20s. Then you got to go to Kareem at 14.6, you know, and then it's down from there. So it's just incredible what he's doing. What, if anything, does it mean? Are we giving flowers here? Or are we rolling our eyes? What are we doing?
I mean, look, you're correct. He's having a great individual season. When you detail all the issues the Lakers have, LeBron James on-court play, maybe not his general managerial skills, but his on-court play is not among them.
What could you be implying there? My goodness.
But, you know, I'm looking Friday, April 8th, Thunder in Staples Center. I don't think, you know, LeBron clinching a scoring title is going to have Staples Center all lit, you know, like, let's go. The 32-win Lakers, we got a scoring champ. So I don't know, like, it's, to me, it's not going to be some monumental thing that gets talked about. I mean, the big one's going to be when he passes Kareem. That is going to be pretty incredible. And it is, look, at 37, what he's doing from a scoring perspective, 250-point games since the All-Star break. The only two games they've won, they're 2-7, and the two wins, he's gotten 50. But it's a depressing time around the Lakers. Did you see that Suns game yesterday? 48 points to Phoenix in the first quarter, 140 points, and it's just nobody seems to be enjoying that process. So it is going to be a kind of a, you know, those commercials, usually they're for, you know, I guess depressing pills, but before, like, the cloud is hovering over the person as they walk around. That's just the Lakers season. So it's tough to celebrate something, you know, within that.
As a quick, Jay, like, let me add a programming note before we throw it to you. Andrew has helped us on the chat here and said 58 games is a minimum for the scoring title. So if Kevin played every game the rest of the way, he will fall three games short. So yes, we're taking Kevin out of the discussion. All right, go ahead, brother.
Yeah, so I feel like it's not necessarily an accomplishment that people will be doing jumping jacks over in Staples Center this year. But I think LeBron knows if he wins a scoring title now, 20 years from now, 30 years from now, when they're remembering his career, they'll look at that and say, that dude averaged 30 points per game at age 37 and won a scoring title at age 37. And I saw a tweet the other day that kind of put it into perspective for me because, you know, you see all the tweets, LeBron doing this at 37, LeBron doing this in year 19 or year 20, whatever it is. And I saw a tweet that kind of put it in perspective for me because I kind of take it for granted sometimes. And it was showing basically all the other, you know, top five, top 10 players, what they were doing at age 37. And it was like Shaq was averaging like, I don't know, 8-9 points a game. And Michael Jordan was out of the league, though he came back a little later. Like, all these guys were doing nothing. And LeBron, even though it's on a team that's no good, even though it's on a team that's been broken all season long, partly because he wanted Russell Westbrook on his team, he might lead the damn league in scoring. And so when you judge him against anyone else in the history of the league, what he's doing right now, it's special. And I think he knows that. And I think he realizes it's about more than this season now. And I also think, you know, the way that the Lakers have been, and it's kind of just a hopeless franchise. What he said last night after getting to the assist milestone, he did kind of like, this is one of those seasons where you take the joy wherever you can get it. I think he's kind of using this scoring thing as a way to motivate him to give him the juice for the rest of the season that maybe was gone because the Lakers are trapped in a season that's just kind of, at this point, honestly, pretty meaningless. And the front office, I mean, they went through the trade deadline. They needed to make a move, if anything, just to change the energy in the room, and they did nothing. And I don't necessarily blame them for doing nothing because there was no move to make. Like, if you move Russell Westbrook, you're going to have to attach one of your future picks, and that's probably not something you want to do for a team that's going nowhere anyway.
Yeah, I mean, the John Wall thing captures it perfectly because it's like, yeah, the only move on the table that we know of was a guy that had not played all year long. Like, that's the best thing they had going.
Yeah, so nothing was going to work, but LeBron knew nothing was going to work. And so I do think he's using this as a way to find the energy for the last 15 games or whatever of the season. So I do think it means something to him now in a way that it never meant anything to him at any other point in his career. He always knew, I'm not a score first guy. I think that's
a big part of this, Jay, is like, I'm sure you saw, you know, on his show on HBO, the shop, that he got aggregated like crazy, that he said on the latest episode that, you know, that he was never talked about as a scorer, and that always pissed him off. And, you know, this fits perfectly into that narrative now.
It's funny, though, because he was one of the guys who said he wasn't a scorer.
He was the guy. He's a master. He's his own puppeteer, if you could somehow be that. Like, yeah, he knows what he's doing, though. He's putting a nice cherry on top at the end of his career, that if I can't get the fifth championship. He's checked all these boxes that have got him in the discussion for greatest of all time. So titles with three franchises, you know, that puts him by himself. Okay, again, if you can't get the fifth title, scoring title in a Lakers jersey, I still think that that's where it's going to happen. That's my anticipation. You know, on the heels of winning a scoring title at 37, it is incredible stuff. I mean, yes, later in the context of this Lakers team, it doesn't matter at all right now.
He needed something to motivate him the rest of the season because his team was not motivating.
He would be already done for the year. He would be resting and waiting for the offseason if he didn't have these kind of carrots to chase, for sure.
Kareem, 22 PPG as a 37-year-old, 23 at age 38. It's crazy. I'll just pull up Kareem's basketball reference. Just look at his points per game year after year after year. I mean, the amount of points he has in, he didn't start playing until he was 22. So,
Jay, yeah, the hopeless franchise labeling stuck in my head when you said it. I think I've come to the conclusion that dysfunctional though the Lakers may be, and they are that, you know, the vast majority of this league, I don't know what the number is, 26, 25, whatever. Do you have any idea how many franchises would love to be as hopeless as these Lakers are? Like, they won a title 2 years ago. That's in, admittedly, I've done Lakers reporting recently where people on the inside get defensive and say things like, all right, we just won the title 2 years ago. We don't care if it was in a bubble. My favorite line from one of the principals was, you know, in a bubble, in a bathtub, in my backyard, it was a championship. And, you know, that's something, as I sit here podcasting from Sacramento, that, you know, the team like that would love to sniff. So, you know, I do wonder. I mean, they don't have a lot of desirable paths out of this for next season, which matters a lot because LeBron's clock, even with him playing well, is certainly ticking. But, you know, the hopeless part, I think, is probably not the case.
I just meant for this individual season,
right,
hopeless part. And I do think as we look forward, like LeBron, what LeBron wants out of the end of his career will be interesting because he could look around LA and think, you know, there aren't really many moves this team could make to get him another title this deep into his career. And he's already talked about maybe wanting to play with his son at one point. So we know that's part of like his future checklist.
Yep.
But how much is LeBron going to want to add to that title count? How much will he be willing to make demands on the Lakers if he doesn't think they can help him get that?
Right.
And so I think he's always been the guy who has taken, like, he led all the players in taking ownership of your career, using your power to get what you want from a situation or to a situation that you want. And now he's in a situation where, you know, I think a lot of reasonable people could want something different, whether it's the talent around him, whether it's whatever else. So I do think his decision in all of this, whatever it is, could be really interesting and could really define what the Lakers do, whether it's next season or beyond.
My favorite way to frame his longevity, though, if at least wrapping up the initial point, is just looking at where a lot of the people in his draft class are today, like what they're doing. You know, obviously, you know, the top ones like Chris Bosh, Carmelo is obviously coming off the bench for them. Dwayne Wade retired. But even you go down the list, Nick Collison, Thunder front office, was in that draft class.
That's crazy.
David West was in that draft class. Boris Diaw. Kendrick Perkins on TV, Leandro Barbosa on the Warriors coaching staff. Luke Walton was in that draft class. Luke Walton is like two head coaching jobs, you know, and gone right now. You can just keep going. You know, Steve Blake, Zaza.
Shout out Lou Williams, though. Lou Will still.
Keith Bogans got banished from the first team I ever covered full time.
James Jones is the Suns GM. Kyle Korver is a Nets coach. And yeah, he might lead the league in scoring. Well, his entire draft class is like deep into their like second and third careers.
Yeah, Lou was the only guy.
What's Jason Capono doing though?
That is a good question.
Yeah, Lou Will, I believe, is the only guy still going in the second round from that year.
Yeah, Carmelo, I think, is the only other one from the first round.
Right.
And
right.
You know, in some ways, that has been his downfall as, you know, the general manager, a little bit what I was talking about, which is like he has stuck to guys that are aged.
That's why he's so active as a GM these days, Slater, because he at this damn age, you should be a GM.
that plus but his like belief that guys in his, you know, general friendship and age group still have it when they don't. You know, people who are great at times of his career aren't as great anymore. I think that's been one of his big issues.
All right, gentlemen, I'm going to let you out on that. This was a lot of fun. Jay, it came together super late and organically, but thank you very much, my guy, for jumping on. You helped us check a box that we have not checked this season, really, when it comes to the Celtics talk. Breaking things down, I highly recommend the piece that we talked about at length earlier for the listeners. Go read White House Suits, Steam Showers, and 6 Years of Nonstop Intensity, Kevin Garnett's Celtics Days by the great Jay King and Jared Weiss. Thank you, brother. Good to see your face. Good to hear your voice. Appreciate you.
Thank you, man. This is fun.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a 1-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.